So we continue our discussions on the comprehensive review of the IFRS SMEs. We have one paper to go. Let me remind you, this is Eastern's first appearance for the board, so be nice. And that goes both ways, Eastern, right? So over to you.
Thank you. The paper asks the board to decide whether to develop an amendment to the IFRS for SME standard to align with IFRS 15, considering the feedback from the request for information and the recommendations of the SMEIC. The request for information sought views on the merits of three possible alternatives to aligning Section 23 to the IFRS for SME standard with IFRS 15. Alternative one was to modify Section 23 to align the outcomes with IFRS 15. Alternative two was to rewrite Section 23 to align with IFRS 15, with implicit intention to simplify the requirements of the standard consistent with the overall alignment approach. And alternative three was not to amend Section 23 as part of this comprehensive review. The request for information also sought views on providing transitional relief if Section 23 was amended to align with IFRS 15. Overall feedback supported aligning Section 23 with IFRS 15. However, there was no clear support for the approach to alignment, which was preferred by stakeholders. Alternative two had a narrow majority based on the count of written responses. This alternative was also preferred by the SMEIC members and respondents to the online survey. This contrasts with the feedback at outreach events, where participants generally supported alternative one. Stakeholders also generally supported providing transitional relief if Section 23 was amended, with most supporting the relief that was put forward in the request for information. The staff analysis applies the three alignment principles of relevance, simplicity, and faithful representation, which supports the staff recommendation to align the IFRS for SME standard with IFRS 15 by rewriting Section 23 to reflect the principles and language used in IFRS 15, being alternative two. Taking each of these principles in turn, applying the relevance principle, the staff note that IFRS 15 is considered to provide more relevant information compared to the previous revenue standard. Therefore, alignment would allow this improvement to be replicated in the financial statements of SMEs. Applying the principle of simplicity, the staff note the apparent simplicity of alternative one, where alignment would achieve by modifying existing text of Section 23. However, this alternative would mean bridging two substantively different frameworks, which risks introducing a level of complexity into the standard. Feedback from stakeholders also raised concerns about the potential for unintended consequences of this approach and the difficulties it might introduce for SMEs on transition. Therefore, the staff think rewriting Section 23 offers a more straightforward approach, which would ensure the fundamental principles for revenue recognition in IFRS 15 are reflected in the IFRS for SMEs standard. Rewriting Section 23 also provides scope for making significant simplifications to the requirements of IFRS 15 to ensure that the accounting and reporting requirements for revenue are easier and less costly for SMEs to understand and apply. Finally, applying the principle of faithful representation, the staff note that IFRS 15 introduced a new approach for accounting for revenue that the board has concluded results in information that more faithfully represents a reporting entity's performance. Therefore, again, alignment would mean that this improvement would be replicated in the financial statements of SMEs. In considering the costs and benefits of alignment with IFRS 15, the staff believe that the application of a revised Section 23 will result in additional costs for SMEs. However, it's expected that these will be limited for most SMEs and able to be reduced by making simplifications to the requirements of IFRS 15 and also providing transitional relief, as is set out in the request for information. The paper also outlines the content of the revised Section 23 if the Board agree with the staff recommendation. As mentioned, a key element of this approach is the simplifications to the requirements of IFRS 15, which the staff plan to bring to a future Board meeting. I'll hand over to the Board for discussion, and the question for them is set out on page 21 of the agenda paper.
Thanks, Jason. Tom, please.
Yeah, so I thought I'd go first because I think to me this is a direct continuation of our last discussion. If we want to have something that's clear and concise and also minimize the possibility that different people will read the thing and draw different understandings, especially if it's being translated, then the safest way is to fully rewrite. Anything else is going to be convoluted, it's going to be complex, and we're going to increase the risk of people misunderstanding and translations going amiss. And so I would kind of strongly support the rewrite. And I think if you do a really good job, it's going to be far more concise as well.
Thank you. Thanks. So as I looked at this, I want to thank the staff for all the work here. I think laying out the issues and figure out where we're going among the three options, I think between one and two is the superior approach to what we'd be doing. I do have a bit of hesitation, though, in that we're pretty early in the IFRS 15 journey, so to speak, where we've got a lot of practical experience now with preparers and auditors taking a look at what comes out and where you run into difficulties and where do things get complex. Where we might not be as far along, though, is in the user experience. Because users are able to take in the initial disclosures and realize what they don't have. But at the fringes of some of those complexities, they learn by example iteratively over time. So some changes are made. There may be, for example, we talked about modifications as one area of simplifications we'd look at. Users may not have a lot of experience with seeing contract modifications and how they play out because they're not everyday transactions for every company. And so we're certainly at a lesser point in terms of learning for the users. And I think that plays into the fact that we don't have a PIR yet. We don't have a formal process to even reach out to those users and understand where their points of difficulty are. So I think when I look at this, I see a request to go ahead with aligning with IFRS 15 when we're fairly early in that journey, while at the same time agreeing to simplifications that are necessary on a cost-benefit basis. But I'm not sure we have the information on how that cost-benefit would impact the users quite yet, which makes me hesitant. I think where I come out is supportive of sort of following the journey in terms of aligning with IFRS 15 in terms of principles, but really wanting to focus on what the simplifications are going to do to the user experience and what's going to be apparent and what's not and what information could be lost and making sure we're really concrete on the cost benefit of all those simplifications, which may require a little bit more outreach than we might traditionally do.
Thank you. Bruce.
Thanks very much. So just to start off with, I support the kind of approach to it that staff's making. I mean, I think to try and bridge the IFRS 11-18 guidance and what we've got here, I agree, we've just become a mess in terms of the approach you would take there. I also think that we talk about kind of the process of what we're going through. We've taken a decision to align these standards, the IFRS and the IFRS SMEs, and I guess to me, this is a fundamental change. And I guess if we took a decision not to align these, I think we'd have a very difficult position in terms of the journey we're taking people on that we're wanting to go alignment. So I think that if this is one of those, I mean, if we look at the big ones in kind of 9, 15, 16, et cetera, if we're not going to align these, then we've got to be questioning the kind of message we're giving out there that we're going to align this with IFRS. Just a couple of things about that. Firstly, I hear what Zach's saying, and I mean, I guess I had the same kind of initial concern around the PIR and saying, well, hang on, we shouldn't be waiting until we've done that. Kind of coming back to my experience of when we were doing the IFRS 15 implementations, I mean, the majority of implementations of IFRS 15 weren't that drastic for kind of the smaller type of businesses. Yes, your large telecoms and certain large industries were really heavily impacted by this. But kind of when you got down to even under full IFRS, kind of the companies I would think would fit into this framework, they really didn't struggle as much with IFRS 15. So I guess what would be interesting is when Zach's talking about some of potentially looking at some of that feedback, I would strongly recommend let's talk to some of the firms, especially who've done the implementations of IFRS 15. And not necessarily just the big four firms, but let's try and look at those other kind of the mid-tier firms who've done the IFRS 15 implementations on clients using IFRS and see where those challenges were. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't agree with that principle, saying it wasn't as major a change for a lot of those companies in terms of where it is, which is why I wouldn't worry too much about waiting for the PIR. I also think that we've got to kind of get to a stage where we look at all the simplifications together. And I just say that because I think that the question B we've asked around the transition, I think it's very difficult to answer that now in terms of do we agree with providing transition relief. Well, I can't tell you because I don't know what we're going to tell them to do in the first place and how that's going to impact on the numbers. So my suggestion is going to be, like anything we're going to change, I think once we see what we change, what we're going to change, I think it'd be great to then talk about the transition. I just, in my mind, it was a little bit early to start saying, should we provide transitional relief? I like the idea, but once again, it depends what the outcome is. But yeah, I would definitely support that. Last thing I was going to say is that unlike IFRS 13, where I think fair value is kind of the same across the two frameworks, and I appreciate the comments the various comments made around making sure these are the same, I think we can do some simplifications here. And yes, we may not end up getting exactly the same answer, but that doesn't faze me too much in this area, because I think that if we're saying, well, hang on, the revenue model is based on an IFRS 15 model, but it's not IFRS 15. And if somebody wants to use IFRS 15, we'll go and use full IFRS. This is taking principles out of that, and we're using them in the context of the SME standard. So I'm not too concerned if these two don't end up with the same answer, because I don't think they intended to. We can't have the same objective for both and end up with different requirements. So I think in the context of that, I'm happy that this doesn't end up exactly the same. Probably a little bit contrary to where we were in IFRS 13, where I thought we really kind of had to hit the same target. So yeah, I don't mind if these two kind of end up in a slightly different place, providing the alignment is on the way, which is why I like the idea. I think the five-step process we've got is a fundamental in 15. I'd look at using that, but where we can simplify, I think we should try and look at that. Thank
you. Okay.
I agree with the staff recommendation. And I don't know if it can answer Zach's concerns. I think IFRS 15 was a huge improvement by comparison to what was before. The notion of transfer of control is far more robust as a principle than transfer of risk and rewards. It has enabled to improve internal control within companies. I'm saying that because it's something that is not often that cannot be shown or proved, really. But it's something that IFRS 15 has brought, bringing an improvement in the internal control process of companies, i.e., even for smaller entities, bringing more consistency in the way similar transactions are accounted for. And so I think then, of course, if you have this outcome internal to a group and throughout the companies composing a larger group, it's also an improvement to comparability. As a preparer, when I was a preparer, I company also even our smaller units in their journey to transitioning to IFRS 15. And I think that once the underlying principles of IFRS 15 are understood, then of course it enables those even smaller subsidiaries to tackle the accounting for their contracts with customers. So I think it will be challenging, of course, notably for the staff to try to come to a solution, as Bruce said, to simplify a bit, of course, the wording. But no doubt that they will succeed in doing so. But of course, on the mere principle, it will be an improvement for the IFRS for SMEs standards. And I think we can do that without waiting for the PIR, because it, the improvement will be noticed also for those smaller entities. It has been the case for smaller units within groups, so I don't see why it shouldn't benefit also to smaller independent or individual entities.
Thank you, Bertrand. Mary.
High level supportive of the staff direction, so it's comments thinking about how we approach it. I think perhaps we were, I don't know if it's naive, but focusing too much on changes in outcome and not enough on changes in thinking when we explored alternative one, which was basically to prune out the inconsistent bits. And I think if we, you know, I think it would be in the long term more costly and less effective for everybody to have kind of, well, the story of a camel is a horse designed by a committee, and it would kind of be the camel of the SME standard. So I think we've got the right outcome. I think, you know, maybe focusing on Zach's concern for a minute, I think we should not default to the idea that we wait for the PIR of the related I4S standard to be complete. We, you know, we should feel able to move forward. I think for this project overall, a big picture strategic decision we've made is that to go for kind of a big bang approach with playing catch up for the number of major standards that were issued that were not incorporated in the first round or that have been issued since the first round. And so we're doing big bang. Now, maybe with revenue, once we have a package, you know, of what the potential simplifications are, we stop and look at that and say, does this make the big bang too big? And, you know, should we hold it off? But be clear that our plan with updating for revenue is to move to IFRS 15. And here's about how we will do it. I hope that we can go ahead and include it with the big bang. But maybe there should be a pause for consideration, you know, as we get to the next level of detail. But I don't think it's just because we haven't done the PIR of IFRS 15 yet. I think we just have to look at what volume of change are we asking entities to put through with all the things we're incorporating into this exposure draft. And if we think it's too much, then this might be something that is the candidate for deferral. But I think we should be clear that we've made our decision, obviously subject to consultation, but that we're going for approach two and that we're discarding approach one and that we're approaching it on that basis. Like others, I support the idea of exploring what transition relief is appropriate, but I can't say yet what that would be until I know what the package is. So yes, you're right to focus on thinking about that. In terms of faithful representation and simplification, I think that's got to be iterative, especially for something like this. You know, you can do an initial screening at this stage to say, would it work, would it make sense, and reach some preliminary views. But I think absolutely, especially faithful representation, that's something we've got to come back and assess after we have decided what the package of simplifications are, because I think it's only once I know those simplifications that I can assess whether or not I think the SME standard will give a faithful representation of the underlying transaction. So not disagreement with the high level analysis you've done on a preliminary basis, but I think we have to explicitly come back to that. And then last, in terms of starting to think about what simplifications we can make, useful table in paragraph 32 that captures some of the feedback we got from stakeholders. As I look through the ones that I can see adding complexity across the board rather than just in specific instances are in particular variable consideration and maybe for a good chunk of entities, methods for measuring progress. When it comes to some of the other things, I think the problem is it's not complex for most entities because either they won't have, you know, this issue. As, you know, if you think about the SME population, they won't have this issue. But on the other hand, if we include it in the stand, you know, if you do have the issue because you have complex integration projects, you can be an SME offering a complex integration project. And then I think having a just based it on the contract terms approach would fail faithful representation. So I think that some of the more complex areas will be difficult to simplify, because if an entity has the issue, the more complex approach might, you know, might be necessary. So what I suggest is that the staff think about whether there's any way, kind of the way we do with IFRS standards, to say, here are the core principles, and here's Appendix B, which is the application guidance, that goes into more detail about the more complex issues. Because what I'm trying to think is getting a chapter about revenue recognition that, if you're doing relatively straightforward transactions that don't have contract modifications, that don't have a mix of goods and services and have to assess degree of in integration as to whether it's one deliverable or, you know, one performance obligation or two, if we can move the more complex bits to an authoritative appendix piece, it will make the basic, you know, the five-step model plus the basic overview of the requirements a lot more approachable for those who have only the simpler transactions. And then if you are an SME that has some of these more complex issues, I think we'll have to be cautious about how much we streamline. Like Bruce, I think based on is different from fully aligned with. So I don't have a problem, for example, if you look at variable consideration and say, should we think about modifying that area and saying this is a difference from IFRS 15 for reasons of simplicity we have, you know, decided. And I'm not trying to say I want you to change it, but that, you know, that's something that we spent a lot of time at the TRG discussing how you operationalize that. So I don't have a problem with saying let's, in the interest of simplicity, think about where we could make streamlining possible. But I don't think we want to make it too streamlined for entities that have more complex transactions, which is why I come back to thinking more about presentation. And then, how we write this chapter to maybe position the more complex guidance separately so everybody doesn't have to wade through it. You only have to wade through it, you know, if you have a tip-off in the main body that says further guidance is provided in paragraphs B, da-da-da to da-da-da type of thing. And then the last thing, echoing a theme from our IFRS 13 discussion, you do talk about updating the existing examples so that people can look at the examples and use those as a trigger for, do I think I have to change my revenue recognition or not? Again, you know, if it's an area for which we've made a change between going from IFRS 15 to the SME standard, yeah, I can see that not being a problem. But if it's an area where we haven't made a major change, I think I would, you know, we have, what, 68 examples in IFRS 15. Maybe there's some that, you know, that we could introduce into the SME standard rather than relying on updating the existing SME examples. So maybe not assume that you carry forward all the existing examples in the SME standard versus reviewing the existing examples in IFRS 15.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you. I think I reluctantly agree and support the staff's direction, because based on my experience supporting the local gaps convergence with IFRS 15, I think alternative one is Mission Impossible. So only the way we can achieve the objective is rewriting the standards in the context of SMEs. But I think a question is how to rewrite and to what extent we rewrite. And so I think the reason I reluctantly support this approach is I consider the alignment of the concept of transfer of control might be really important for SMEs to use IFRS for SME. So that's one thing we need to achieve. But the complexity of applying the IFRS 15 is not really the language in IFRS 15 standards. It's more like they use a very simple language and principle basis. But I think that requires the entity to use the significant judgment around applying those simple principles. So I think if we try to simplify or streamline the guidance, which will result in developing additional guidance or creating practical exemption to streamline. So that might be end up with alignment with conceptually it might be aligned, but the outcome of accounting can be ended up with more similar to the outcome of application of IAS 11 or IAS 18. So I truly think we need to control the expectation of alignment to what extent we want to have alignment with IFRS 15. And then at the same time, I really think a consideration of transition relief is really important, especially because even though the transactions and business activities are not so complicated, like those user of the IFRS standards, but at the same time, they really don't have sufficient resource. I mean, they have a limited resource to engage in the transition, and also some SMEs might not afford to use external advisor to get the support. So I understand that now is not good time to discuss about the extent of the practical relief. But yes, once we decide the extent of the alignment and then what type of the standard we are going to develop, we also need to consider transition relief.
Thank you, Erika.
Some observations, many of which have been formed listening to my colleagues, so not very well developed, but just a few observations. I think starting with the observation that Bruce made, which I think was a useful one, I think on reflection what we're really saying here is different to 13. So 13 we're saying we want to start with the same sort of, we want the same definition, but we want to then have the words applied with that definition and we want the same outcome. And that's quite tricky, but that's one thing we're doing. Here, I think on balance, what we're really saying is we want the outcomes to generally be the same as under IFRS 15, but there's probably some situations where we're willing to do something simpler, so maybe it's variable consideration, for example. But as a general proposition, we're planning to use different words. And so I think given that, if that is what we decide to do, maybe it makes sense to say basically your band, if you're applying the big book, you sort of don't look over here, because these words are not words that are going to help you apply IFRS 15. We're sort of going to do an exercise to try and write different words that give the same outcomes in many cases, but it's a different set of words being applied. That would reduce the risk, I think, in both directions a little bit. And that just struck me listening to people, because I think in some cases we consciously want to do something different, so you definitely can't use the words in those situations. But even in other cases, if we're trying to get to basically the same sort of logic, but with different words, we still wouldn't want people applying the big book to come and say, well, but if I applied these words over here, I'd get a different answer, so I'm going to read my IFRS 15 words differently, because we've consciously done a different thing. In terms of... So it's different to 13, I think. So in terms of what we might identify for areas to make it the application or concepts a little bit simpler, just a couple of thoughts prompted by Mary's comments. Probably looking at what came in as questions to the Transition Resource Group and also what's come in as questions to the Implementations Committee is a good way of identifying some of the trickier areas of IFRS 15 that we might want to think about whether we want to use those ideas or not, just as a source of materials.
And
thanks, Andreas. I do agree with the alternative to approach. There's been lots of discussion on that. I won't go there again, but you know, Tom said it very clearly at the beginning, and that record reflected my thoughts. But what I did want to talk about was this: how the examples are going to work. So the paper tells us something that we're aware of with how the Section 23 works for IFRS for SMEs. That is, many people look at the examples and work out how to do their revenue recognition using the examples in the appendix of Section 23, which is described, I think it's described as not part of 23, but adding to 23, which implies that's non-authoritative guidance in these examples. So I'm just wondering, as the staff think about this, I'm just wondering, are we expecting people to do this in the same sort of way, where they look at the examples and then work back from there? Or are we hoping in this whole project to do with the IFRS for SMEs and the alignment approach that we're taking, that people will actually look at what we have within the standard, look there first, and then use examples subsequently? So we're actually hoping for a different way of using the standard to how it's presently being used. And the reason why I think this is important is that the staff are going to be spending a lot of time on taking the requirements of 15 and turning them into guidance, which is how they phrase it in paragraph 74, and then applying simplifications. So a lot of thinking, a lot of work's going to go into that, and we've had lots of ideas in these discussions that are relevant to that. And so we would be hoping, surely, that people are going to go there and apply that and work with that, not just try and come in through a back door of examples. So whilst the examples in the past have been very useful, I'm not sure how much we should be implying that that same approach can be used. Yes, we would need to still provide examples and change them from what they are now in Section 23. I'm not sure how many are going to come from 15, or are we going to rewrite new ones? Are we going to create new examples that line up with what was in 23? I think that's something we're going to have to explore, and we've had a bit of conversation today about the extent which you can have examples that are different in the SMEs and that are different in full. So it was paragraph 70 that gave me a bit of pause, because the paragraph says that the fact the examples will be there will help with the transition, help people apply 15 and work out how this new aligned approach that aligns with 15 will work. I think that's all good, but I just do question whether we actually want people to approach revenue recognition differently, working from principles and working from the guidance, rather than working backwards from the examples. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Jinja.
Okay. I also support staff's recommendation, as Tom said at the start. I think conceptually and practically, alternative two is the right direction to fully write section 23. I think this is the right direction. I think the concern arising from stakeholders about additional cost when we align the approach which has adopted IFRS 15. So I think maybe there's some communication things we can do in the future. For example, for SMEs, normally those contracts rather simple than those other companies which are applying IFRS 15. I think Mary also mentioned that, for example, those contracts only have one performance obligation. Are they really necessary to do five steps approach? I don't think they needed to do these kind of things, because so I think maybe because the main costs were arising from those companies to align section 23 to IFRS 15 is five steps approach, five steps process. So I think in some area, if the contract is simple, short term, only one single performance obligation, I think the answer, the process they needed to do is very straightforward. So this, I think this is one thing we can do in some area, you know, in a standards or basis or conclusion, something like that. Second is I really, actually from my perspective, is I really like the transition relief you're giving for Pixar, because for some contracts, particularly those long-term contracts, it will be affected, you know, dramatically if we align with the IFRS 15. So I think providing this kind of transition relief actually will really help those companies to ease implementation of new fully updated, you know, section. So from my perspective, I like the transition relief and to help those companies to transition from current section 23 to the new section, which will be based on the IFRS 15.
Thank you. So, notwithstanding the comments from Bruce and Sue about the similarity or differences between IFRS 13 and IFRS 15 in this approach, my thinking is similar in terms of there is a conceptual answer and there's a practical answer. And what really struck me is that nobody in this discussion mentioned alternative 3, which is what we currently have in IAS 23, in section 23, right? I wonder, having been through the implementation of IFRS 15, how much change we actually expect from companies switching from a risk and rewards model into the control model, considering that we are talking about SMEs and forgetting for a moment large utility companies, right? If we think of the average SMEs, my gut feeling would be that 95%, if not more, of the contracts would not see any change in revenue recognition whatsoever. But we make those companies do all the assessments that are necessary. And I wonder whether we, with best intentions, we are actually doing them a good service. Now, one way of mitigating that is actually talking to the transition relief principle. I think if we find a clever way of telling SMEs that if you currently have a contract that has these features, you can assume that this country will meet that requirement in the IFRS 15 equivalent in the SME standard, to just abridge the thought process that otherwise would be necessary. If we are really focused on, we want to get to the same outcomes but with simpler language, I think we also need to think about, okay, where do we feel or do we know from the big gap that companies have used IAS 18 before, have now applied IFRS 15, but haven't seen really dramatic change, but have incurred costs because they needed to assess all the project types. And it would be something that we will be imposing on these companies for sure. So if we are imposing costs, yes, with little perceived benefit or with little change, then the question is, are we chasing a conceptual argument? And I completely buy into that, obviously, but with little practical consequences. I think that is a consideration that I would just like to flag. That said, I'm completely behind what you suggest. I can absolutely live with that. And given that I'm not an IFRS or SME preparer or applicant, if they don't think that alternative 3 is a viable alternative or doesn't receive as much traction as alternative 2, be my guest, right? I just wanted to bring that into the consideration here, and I see that at least I have stimulated debate, Bertrand and Mary.
Yeah, I think what, to to answer your question, Andreas, what are the benefits? It's not just conceptual. There's a true benefit for smaller operations, which is the improvement of internal control. And this is something that, of course, is rather immaterial. You cannot necessarily show that to the outside world, to the outside market. But even and above all for smaller operations, it's truly a benefit that can't be measured, but it's surely a benefit that, at least from my perspective, should outweigh the cost of the of implementing IFRS 15.
Okay, Mary?
Just a first reaction to some of the challenges that you raised. And I think some of the thinking about here are the characteristics of your revenue stream, you know, of your revenue transactions that mean you should expect a change versus here are the characteristics that should lead you to expect no change in the timing or amount could be really valuable additional material that we think of trying to develop. You know, so this puts more weight on us in particular and the staff. Think of trying to develop, but as companion material that kind of falls away after a year or two. It's a lot easier to issue educational material at the same time we initially publish something than to try and come in 6 months or 9 months or 2 years after and provide this is how you should have done it, you know, kind of comments. But if we can think up front as we work through what the simplifications are, what would be the indicators that you should expect to change? I don't know that I'd want to embed that in the standard itself because it could cloud some of the long-term ongoing application. But I could see it as a supplement that could be quite useful in reducing, you know, in us helping others to manage that cost of transition to the change. So it's not specifically transition relief, and I think that's a separate category. But I think there's a lot you can do with kind of simple diagnostics that could really add to the approachability of a revised session. So I think I'd think about that maybe more for outside rather than inside.
I think the costs and benefits here are challenging, and it may be an issue of visibility as much as anything else. I hear what Bertram says. I can't prove either way. You know, I think it's probably hard to generalise also over such a large universe. I'm sure it's true for some SMEs. I'm not sure it'd be true for all the majority. I just don't know, and I don't think we're able to prove that. I think then against that background, I think the nature of the simplification has become very important in terms of alleviating some of those concerns. So you lower the bar on costs, and so then the bar is also lower on the benefits that we need to achieve for that. But I agree it's something that we do need to be cognizant of here, absolutely.
Thank you. Jinjo.
Thank you, Angus. I also, you know, thinking about the point Angus made that when I read the paper or the proposals, different approaches, I also think about what the difference we are going to make in practice, for particularly those outcomes. This is why I previously said that for SMEs, maybe a lot of contracts only including one single performance obligation. I think the outcome would be the same, and they're not necessary to, you know, to do five-step process to think, you know, it costs too much, but the outcome would be the same. But one argument, I think, a support approach to alternative to it that I think some area the paper also mentioned that try to fill the gap currently Section 23 have, because I think in the past several years or perhaps 10 or 20 years the practice developed very fast. Those sales contracts developed very fast. There are a lot of innovation in place. So some companies sell goods. In the meantime, they provide a service. Some company provide service. In the meantime, they also provide goods, or even online or offline something. So the contracts, I think, become more complicated then when we develop Section 23. I think 10 years ago or more than 10 years ago. So I think in terms of these those contracts, I think align with IFRS 15, we can get some benefit to resolve those practical issues and also to fill the gap currently those SMEs companies are facing. So this is one thing I think we can, I think from my perspective, I support that, but in some area, we can try to communicate to the SMEs, you know, that even we align with IFRS 15, not necessarily they need to go through a whole process to add additional unnecessary burden or cost for them. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, I think we are ready to vote, but contrary to the other sections, I would probably take it in stages. And the reason for that is that I've heard some people saying it's a bit difficult for me to provide a blank check to transition relief if I don't really know what the principles are, right? I first want to see the principles to assess the burden that probably then we need to give relief, which is why I think we are probably more ready to vote on question A than on B, but I will nonetheless have a vote on both. So question A was, do you agree that we develop amendments for the IFRS for SME standard to align with IFRS 15 by rewriting section 23, also known as alternative 2, to reflect the principles and language used in IFRS 15? Can I see a show of hands who would support that?
12.
Full house. And could I suggest that rather than making the second staff recommendation so strict as it is labeled here, that does the board agree to provide, to consider providing transition relief, something like that, to make it clear that surely we want to have a look at this to alleviate the cost-benefit thing that's there, but obviously we first need to see the requirements. Would that travel with board members? Can I see a show of hands?
Surely we always look at that, but
yes.
Yeah, okay. Well done for the first paper. You've set the bar high for the next paper. Very good, excellent. So that concludes our session on the IFRS for SMEs. Thank you very much, team. Great job. Well done. And also brings to an end today's session on the board. See you tomorrow.